Welcome, everybody. It is the home stretch of General Assembly. Are you going to make it all the way to the end? We will make it, won't we? I hope you've had a good day. I appreciate seeing some of you here for the fourth time for this fourth in our wisdom and generosity track to explore some of the ideas about stewardship and fundraising in our congregations. What we tried to do was gather questions, experts in various areas of fundraising and trying to touch on both beginners in fundraising and people who've been at it a little while longer. So I hope that some of it has touched you and helps you feel a little more equipped for the work that you're doing. I share the passion that many of our panelists and speakers have offered about what meaningful work this is to align our resources with our values and to make real impact in the world through our financial generosity. So it's been a real pleasure to hear these folks and to learn along with you. This is our last session, as I said, creative fundraising. Just looks at a couple of, one innovative project that you're going to want to hear about and know more about because it's a resource for you, and also bringing in two of our movement's real professionals at fundraising. And these two women, Jessica Cloud and Denny Davidoff, do that work for our seminaries. So it's a real joy to have them and get the benefit of hearing from them. And Sean Neil Barron has been running the Faithify program, which is out of the Mass Bay District serving our UUA. So a lot of exciting things to learn. I want to start us off with a brief reading, and then Sean will go first, and Jessica, and then Denny will share their thoughts and wisdom with us. Just a brief poem. I love poetry for setting a tone and reminding us of what's important and why we're here. This is a poem by a Slovenian poet, Boris Novak. It's called Decisions. Between two words, choose the quieter one. Between word and silence, choose listening. Between two books, choose the dustier one. Between the earth and the sky, choose a bird. Between two animals, choose the one that needs you more. Between two children, choose both. Between the lesser and the bigger evil, choose neither. Between hope and despair, choose hope. It will be harder to bear. Sean?
Well, hello, everyone. As Mary Catherine says, I am Sean Neil Barron, and I've had the pleasure of serving our movement as the program manager for Faithify, which is a gift from the New England region to our movement. We get a question a lot. It was like, I hear this Faithify thing. Who funds it? Where does it come from? And how much money do you take? And we're going to get all into that, but I just wanted to start with that because this is a resource that was developed out of the Mass Bay District, now the New England region, and gifted on to all of you. And so that's a moment of generosity from the inception of what Faithify is all about. But before we start, how many of you have used Faithify, made a donation, been on the site, posted a project? All right, so that's a good proportion. How many of you have made a donation on any sort of crowdfunding website, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, GoFundMe? All right. And what about just online donations in general? Okay. Perfect. So you guys are pretty much experts in what I'm going to be talking about in terms of the mechanics. And so we're going to string it all together, thinking about how you can use Faithify to fundraise within your institutions, but also personally, because Faithify is open to all of us. But I wanted to start off with a little bit of a story. We were asked, one of the questions to reflect on was, how is fundraising ministry to us? And so I was thinking about that question, and a specific moment popped into my mind. And I'm going to share that moment, and it may not immediately be clear what the connection is. And so when I joined Unitarian Universalism, I was 16. I was a closeted teenager of two parents who hadn't stepped into a church since they were 18. They were very confused at why their son was going to a church. They were very worried. My mother turned to me one day and said, "Do they believe in evolution?" Thank you. Bye. And I was privileged to have a really good relationship with the minister of the Unitarian Church of Calgary, Meg Roberts. And I remember one moment I was in her office and she was providing a beautiful display of active listening as I was crying over my first love breaking my heart. She just was there. I remember at one point she said, "I'm stopping myself because I'm getting into the problem-solving mode and you don't need that. You just need me to listen." And she did. And through that listening, I was able to overcome a barrier between what would be my future and what would be my past, trying to work through that space so that I could move forward in my relationships with not only myself, but with others. And I think that's the connection I see between ministry and fundraising. I see ministry as our ability to break down barriers that allows our interconnection to manifest in a deeper way that serves love and justice and mercy in the world. And I think that when we allow our ideas to be connected with the resources that allow them to actually be lived out in the world, we see true ministry taking root. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Faithify and the statistics and our success, but at its heart, it's not really about the dollar amounts or the projects. What it is about is what people are able to do when they connect their resources to the works of love in the world. That's why we created Faithify. We created Faithify because we wanted it to be easier for that to happen. So, Faithify. What does Faithify allow you to do? So Faithify is a website, faithify.org. You can pull out your smartphone and browse along as you want. But Faithify allows you to take an idea and break down the barrier that would exist between that idea and a crowd of people willing to give you their money to enact it in the world. That's what crowdfunding is all about. Crowdfunding is allowing you or people like you to have an idea, to share it easily on a platform that is accessible to many people on the internet, and then allow those people in turn to take out their credit cards and make a donation. It's pretty simple. It's a simple concept, but it's revolutionary in a few ways. It's revolutionary because the internet allows us to spread our ideas farther than we thought possible before. With a few clicks, you can have your project, your vision, your idea show up on screens across the world. And anyone who has access to a credit card and who wants to gift you their money can make a donation towards your cause. It breaks down a technological, a geographic barrier between what we thought was possible before. Successful crowdfunding transforms our interdependence into investments through inspiration and an easy-to-use platform. One of the things we've tried to do at Faithify is make it as easy, as secure, and as simple for users to make donations, for you to post on our site, because we know that the internet is not always the most accessible place for many of us. We know that our average user on Faithify is over 55 years old. I don't remember a time when the internet didn't exist. That is not true for our average donor. And so what we've consistently tried to do is create a platform that allows our average user a simple, easy, and secure process so that they can feel comfortable and confident in asking people to trust them with their money. That's really important to us. So it breaks down that technological barrier between having to code your own website, set up a payment processor, doing that all yourself, which many people could do. But we thought, well, why would everyone have to go and do that individually? Why can't we do that on behalf of our movement and then let our movement take it from there? So that's the first barrier that Faithify takes down. The second barrier is, I think, more important. I think the barrier that Faithify takes down is an inspiration barrier. When you go to faithify.org right now, there are 158 campaigns that you can look at. Campaigns from youth groups trying to go to GA, from a musical about heteronormativity that's debuting on Broadway, gun violence reduction projects, prison ministry projects, funding for buildings after fires. When you go on faithify.org, you're not just being invited to donate your money. You're being invited to see what our movement is doing on the ground, in our communities. You're in fact given a platform in which you can become inspired by what is going on in Unitarian Universalist communities around the world. Now, one quick story. One of our projects recently was a community garden from Woodstock, Vermont. They have a great video. I suggest you check it out. They wanted to create a permaculture garden on their church property that the local elementary school could use, that would provide food for their local food bank. And they posted the project, they got their donations, that was all great, they met their goal. And one of my colleagues was up there meeting with them for another reason. And the lead organizer of this project turned to him and said, you know, I never felt connected to our Unitarian Universalist movement until I went on Faithify. Because when I posted a project on Faithify, what I realized is I was a part of a large faith that was doing work in the world. And that inspiration, that connectivity, we think that's one of the biggest gifts that Faithify has been able to give to our movement. And you, as savvy fundraisers, after this is your fourth session, some of you, know the power of inspiration in connecting people to giving to what is most meaningful to them. So I'm just going to show you a little video that we produced that showed just a little bit of what's happened on our site in the last year. And I apologize, the music is not going to be very loud. You can imagine it in your head. Thank you. So in the 2 years since we launched Faithify at Providence, these fonts got all wonky, and we'll have to amend that. As of today, we've had over $558,000 pledged on the site. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of impact that we've been able to make together to 156 projects. 75% of them have succeeded in meeting their goal, and the average pledge was $97. So when you go to faithify.org, this is what you find. This is our homepage, and if you scroll down, you see the different projects that are available for funding. This is the heart of what we do. And so what happens when a donor is coming to our site is they click into a project and they see this screen. So below this is the description of the project. Over there, maybe a photo or a video. And on the right-hand side, you have the ability to fund the project and make your donation. But what is kind of important is above that. So you see the amount that the project has raised, but also the amount that they need to raise. Because on Faithify, you need to raise your entire goal amount to get any of the money. Which everyone's like, oh, that's scary. We might have to risk not getting it right. We don't like to do that all the time, do we? I'll get to why we do that in a moment. But yeah, that's the site. Perfect. So this is the pitch. And one of the things I love about this is it forces us to think differently about stewardship. You've probably been hearing a lot about how stewardship trends are changing. And one of the biggest changes in the trends is a movement away from an institutionally based fundraising model in which people feel akin and connected to an institution, to people funding directly impact and specific projects. Faithify allows us to practice the skill of pitching a specific measurable project to an audience. So who can use Faithify? Well, Faithify can be used for a multitude of different types of projects, but it can be used by individual UUs doing their own work in the world. It can be used by congregations, youth groups, committees. It can be used by UU organizations. We only have two criteria for posting on Faithify. The first one is that you claim Unitarian Universalism, that you say the project we are doing is embodying our faith in some way. And if you scroll to the bottom of the project page, you'll see the question and also the answer. We want our projects to be living our faith boldly in the world. We want them to not just be doing good in the name of justice, we want them to be doing it in the name of our faith. We also want, and this is the second part, we want them to be claimed by Unitarian Universalism. And I think about that as the hand of our mutual covenant reaching out and saying, this project is a part of us, is a part of our movement. And if you meet those two criteria, if you embody our faith and people from our faith are saying, this is a part of our faith, you can use our site. You can use our site to collect donations, leverage your networks, and hopefully be able to advance whatever cause you're doing in the world. This also means that we don't screen out projects that might fail. That's not on us. That's the risk that we take together. So, all or nothing. This is the scary thing. Why do we use all or nothing on Faithify? Some crowdfunding websites, like GoFundMe and Indiegogo, you don't have to do all or nothing. But we're really convinced that all or nothing is the way to go. And the first reason for that is that with an all or nothing, let's say I have a project that I need $10,000 to do. If I fundraise $23.43, I'm not going to get very far. Even if I raise $400, I'm still not going to get very far. We want people to be able to do what they set out to do. We want to give donors the feeling of accountability, that when you donate to a project on Faithify, to the best of the campaign owner's understanding, they're able to actually enact that project in the world. So we think it's good accountability for those using our site. We also think that fundraising with a time limit, and you guys as professionals may back me up on this, fundraising with a time limit creates a sense of urgency. And urgency motivates people to donate now and not in 4 months. Because sometimes 4 months is too late. So that's why we use all or nothing. And then that's the question. Fees. How much do you charge for this wonderful, wonderful service? We do not charge any fees, as I said at the beginning. This is a gift from the New England region. But our credit card overlord, WePay, charges a 2.9% charge plus 30 cents on every donation, which is pretty standard in the world of online transactions. The reason why there's a picture of a gumball machine is I imagine that every time a donation goes through, WePay buys with that 30 cents a gumball. Finally, one of the beautiful things about Faithify is it allows us to activate our networks. Campaigns on Faithify are only successful when they truly engage the people in their crowd. One of the lessons we learned in Faithify is that there is no magical UU crowd waiting to fund all these projects because they're awesome, which is sad. That should exist, but it doesn't. And that means that if you post on Faithify, the important thing is you have to go out and actually activate the people who you think are going to fund your project. That relationship building is what translates into donations. We have a lot of resources that help you do this, like Faithify University, but my time is up. I'd love to talk to you more in the question and answer period. Also, there's a few of our street team members. Michael, you can stand up in the back, maybe. If you see people with this lovely T-shirt on, that means that they're able to answer a lot of your questions about Faithify. We also have a booth in the expressway. We'd love for you to come talk to us about how we can help you Faithify your next project. Thank you.
I'm Jessica Cloud, and I am the Vice President of Advancement at Star King School for the Ministry. I want to talk about my view of fundraising as ministry. So I joined my congregation in Ellisville, Mississippi, a little more than a year ago, and a few months later got the job at Star King. So I have never thought of my career in terms of ministry, or at least I didn't think that I had. I've spent most of my career in higher education fundraising, particularly at large state schools in the South. And the president emeritus of my alma mater, the University of Southern Mississippi, he was an adorable man, wore a bow tie at all of our university events, and he would start every invocation with, "God of all names." So I love him for that. And he talked about that fundraising is a noble endeavor. And fundraising is about your belief in the worthiness of your institution. And I came up out of phone-a-thon. So those people that call you at dinner time and ask you to give to your alma mater, that was me. That was me and people like me. So I did sort of, I enjoyed my work, but I kind of in the back of my mind had this like, I felt a little bit like a used car salesman. Until I had this conversation with Dr. Aubrey Lucas, and he talked about the worthiness of the institution. If I really believe in my college, in my seminary, in my congregation, in my faith, if I believe that these institutions are worthy things, then fundraising for them is a noble endeavor. So I guess I always did, from that moment forward, think about fundraising as ministry. So that was my answer when Mary Catherine asked me about that. So I want to talk about living our values into the mundane part of fundraising. So I want to talk about data. It's kind of boring, right? You didn't expect to talk about data in the creative fundraising session. We're supposed to talk about cool websites and crowdfunding. But this stuff really matters. This stuff really matters because details and data is a way of taking care of people. It's a way to take the beloved community that you feel when you're with people physically in your congregation and carry that out into the world. So if your data is wrong, if you're not taking care of whatever you're using to keep track of your data that you're using for fundraising, that could be an Excel spreadsheet, that might be a handwritten list, whatever it is, you can have all these kinds of things happen. So, you know, you might have an outdated record or people get mailings when they shouldn't. You might send mail to the spouse of someone who's deceased and they're not a UU. You might send it to completely wrong address. You might send out emails that aren't going to reach their destination. You might send things to Mr. Jane Johnson when it's really Mrs. All of these things, these are just examples, but it happens every day in every shop. The way that this ends up happening is it makes people feel like they're not part of the beloved community. So you might not think that it has any impact. So you get busy one day and you enter an address and it's all lowercase. You don't capitalize the street name. Well, sure, it probably will get there. It might not actually have an impact to the point where it doesn't arrive in the mail. But when someone opens that letter, do you think that they'll feel like you took extra care to get it there? So we don't want people to feel like their intent as a donor might not be honored because you're not organized. We don't want them to feel that their church really doesn't know or value them or know what's going on in their life. We don't want people to feel that their funds aren't being utilized in the correct way and that they're not part of the beloved community. We want them to have all the confidence in the world in UU and in their congregation and their church in general. The other thing I'm really passionate about is making fundraising fun. So if you look at this is a list that I like to pull out and remind myself about. I've put it in many strategic plans I've written over the years. But it's about building that strong culture of philanthropy in whatever organization you're in. And my favorite one is the final one, which I bolded. Expressions of fun, humor, and excitement surrounding the fundraising enterprise. Because, again, if you think it's a noble endeavor, because you believe in the worthiness of your institution, then this should be fun. It shouldn't just be work. It shouldn't just be the job of the fundraising committee. It should be everybody all in, pulling on the same end of the rope to get where you need to go as a congregation. So these are shots from an event that I think it exemplifies my approach. Is we started a faculty staff giving campaign at the University of Southern Mississippi, and I really wanted to kick this off. We hadn't had raises in more than 4 years, and we were about to ask these people that had not had raises in 4 years to give back to their institution. And in 3.5 months, we took the faculty staff giving percentage from 10% to 32% in 3.5 months. And we kicked off that event with a Dancing with the Deans event. We literally got 9 academic deans to train with professional ballroom dancers for 6 weeks. And they competed, and we selected a crowd favorite, and we had the grand champion, and we had lots of food, and it was a Valentine's theme. It was really gaudy and terrible, and gaudy and terrible is fun. At least on the Gulf Coast, it's really fun. We like the gaudy Mardi Gras stuff. And so where's your Dancing with the Deans? Where's the fun in your fundraising? Think about it creatively and have that as a goal in your mind. How does your congregation come together to make it fun? You can see like people's signs. They say, when it comes to dancing, we mean business. That was the College of Business. So I mean, it was so fun. The campus really pulled together, and we had over 300 people at that event to watch those 9 deans compete in ballroom dancing. It's a 5-year tradition now, so even though I've left Southern Miss, the Dancing with the Deans still continues. In fact, they have two. We have 2 campuses, so we do a USM Gulf Coast version, and they do a version in Hattiesburg. So fun, fun, fun. And I want to talk a little bit. I also, although I work for Star King, which is, of course, one of the mainstay UU organizations, I also come from a very tiny congregation at our home, Universalist Unitarian Church in Ellisville, Mississippi. And I want to just say that coming in as a new member into a very small congregation has given me such an interesting perspective as a fundraiser. So communication is key to welcoming and inclusion. So I will say that we have a supper club at my church, and I don't often get to go because I'm traveling for Star King so much. But 1 week, my family and I packed up in Hattiesburg, and we made tacos, and we headed to the supper club, and we drove 30 minutes to Ellisville for supper club. We were so excited, and the kids are in the car, and they had canceled supper club. And so we got back in the car and drove back home to Hattiesburg. And that was the same folks that always came, and they didn't imagine that anybody else would come. So when the regulars said they weren't going to be coming, they kind of, just sort of canceled it and didn't bother to communicate to everybody. So I just want to say, hey, reach out beyond your regulars. Continue, again, to push that beloved community. And my congregation's great, but I'm just telling this story as an example that, the good news is in small congregations, everybody knows everybody else. And the bad news is in small congregations, everybody knows everybody else. So I'll tell that experience, that funny story. And now they actually texted me while I was at GA to tell me supper club was canceled. And I was like, I'm in Ohio, but thank you so much. I won't be there. Thanks. So I want to just pose these questions for you to think about as all this stuff in your 4 sessions is swirling around in your head. Ask yourself, how is your data management? Does it make every single person associated with our congregation feel like we know and value them? And if it doesn't, how do we make it do that? And I'll give you a hint at the answer. Clean up your database. Fix it once, and set up systems to maintain it. Because if you don't do that second part, it'll just get dirty again, dirty data. Does our approach show fundraising as a noble pursuit and our congregation as an institution worthy of investment? And if not, how can we make it do that? Well, the way that you do that is you come from an unapologetic place of strength in your message. I had a student caller at the University of South Carolina who I was teaching to fundraise, and she was following the method that we were teaching these students to talk on the phone and how to, she was negotiating. She was overcoming objections. She was doing everything she was supposed to do. She didn't have the results that the other students were having. I couldn't figure out, why is Joy not having breakthrough results? We figured out she was asking people at the beginning of the call, is now a good time to talk? And that is what we call an opt-out. So I, you know, had to have like a couple of what you might call, we say in the South, come to Jesus moments with her. And we talked about how in this day and age of caller ID, there's no need for an opt-out. Unless you seriously hear a three-ring circus and triplets crying in the background, do not offer them an opportunity to get off the phone. And the reason I said is when you say that, when you ask that question, that permission question, you are coming from a place of apology and not from a place where fundraising is a noble endeavor. So think about where you're doing that in your fundraising in your congregation. Where are you coming from a place of strength and success, and where are you coming from a place of apology? Because the place of apology will not show that you're worthy of investment and you believe in what you're fundraising for. And where's the fun in your fundraising? And what can we do to make it fun? So just a couple of ideas. There's many, many, many more, and you'll have to look at your particular congregation and what's fun for your people to figure this out. But I was told at Star King in my early days of my tenure that my language was too secular. I needed to be more sacred in my fundraising language. And what's funny about this to me is that one of the things that really kind of caught wind in our social media was one of the most classic secular four-year fundraising asks, which was we asked people on our social media to make a gift in honor of the class of 2016 with a gift of $20.16. So it was pretty much like, you know, standard tool bag of fundraising, and we had this sort of themed grad year ask. And that captured people's imaginations. That was that little kernel of fun in the fundraising. So where can you do that? My congregation was founded in 1906. Can you have a monthly giving campaign asking people to give $19.06? Or how many years have you been in existence? You know, 104 years. And getting people to give an ask around that. And inexpensive events that bring people together for the purpose of discussing fundraising, but that are fun, like the Dancing with the Deans concept, and ways to say thank you that are fun and engaging and getting people on board. So lots of things. I hope I have just given you a lot to think about, and I'm happy to answer questions, and I'm going to turn it over to Denny.
Impressed with the turnout. It suggests that people are really interested in this topic. So I am tired, Denny Davidoff, and I'm tired because, like Jessica and Sean, I've been working all week and I don't get enough sleep. And I want to talk to you about authenticity and relationships and narrative. And I want to use two examples. One is regarding my work at Meadville-Lombard Theological School, and the other is a story about my home congregation, which is the Unitarian Church in Westport, Connecticut. So Mary Catherine asked me to be hydra-headed, and but at least two heads, and talk to you about those. So about ministry and fundraising. Ministry involves authenticity. It involves people and thinking and relationships that are real and that are raw, and that are about caring. the pastoral part of ministry. And that's pretty much what fundraising is about as well, in its essence. It is my experience that being in relationship with people and telling your story, your narrative, is pretty much what it's all about. So in order to tell the Meadville story, I think I'm just going to tell you about what I've been doing this week. That would be pretty good. Mm-hmm. So there are two parts of fundraising in terms of people. One is you have people who we in the 21st century refer to as the donor base, because, as Jessica has suggested, they and the information about them are in a database. And the people who are your donors, you stay in touch with. You indicate that you care about them. You keep them up to date on what's going on, in our case, in our school. And you frequently ask them for money. And the other set are the people who you don't know, the people who are your potential donors. Because the expansion of the donor base, to use fundraising language, is what leads to getting more funding. Obviously, the more people you ask, the more people you are likely to get money from. And with all of the attributes of current technology, that is a whole lot easier to do than it used to be before we got all these tools to use. So Meadville Lombard came to General Assembly, and we have spent a lot of the week, including at 6:15 tonight over dinner, talking to people who are already our donors. They are people who maybe give us $500 a year, and they are people who maybe give us $5,000 a year, and I have talked to people this week who have given us $500,000. And so part of being at GA and seeing our donors to our school is that the narrative is about sharing. And at base level, what are we sharing? We're sharing the experience of General Assembly and the gathering of the community that is our Unitarian Universalist lifeblood. But we also wanted to talk to people who are potential donors. So on Friday morning, I'm looking at Jessica because she was there as our guest. We invited 250 people who, for the most part, we don't know from Adam, never met them, to have breakfast with us. And we did this by inviting the delegates like you from various congregations. And we literally sent invitations for the most part to people who we did not know. We obtained their contact information off the registration lists because we have arranged with the UUA for both Star King and Meadville Lombard and the service committee to get this information. And you, when you registered as a delegate or just as an exhibitor or whatever to come here, you had the opportunity to tell the UUA that you didn't want them to release any of this information, even to fabulous people like the schools and the service committee, and most people, because we're family, most people did not opt out. So we, and of course we promised the UUA that this would be a one-time shot. You will not continue to hear from Eva Lombard. And when we, when these people arrived at the ungodly hour of 7 o'clock in the morning, we told them our story. That was the whole point. Hello, we're a seminary currently located in the South Loop of Chicago. We have been doing this since 1844, when we were founded in Meadville, Pennsylvania. We'd like to tell you how many students we have. We'd like to tell you about our fabulous faculty, many of whom are here with us this morning. We'd like to tell you how many of the great ministers in Unitarian Universalism have been educated at our school. We'd like to tell you how active our recent alums are. We'd like to tell you about our transformative new curriculum. We'd like to tell you about how we've gone from a residential school to what we call a low residence contextual education model that permits people to largely live at home and do their work in intensive classes, three months out of the year, a couple of weeks, or maybe just 1 week during the year. And we'd like to tell you about the cost of education, of theological education, the cost of securing a Master's of Divinity and preparing to go before the Ministerial Fellowship Committee of the UUA. And we'd like to tell you about why it's really important for new ministers to not be mired in debt as a result of being educated and receiving a Master's of Divinity before they go out into your fabulous paying churches. And we'd like to ask for your help in building up our reserves of tuition aid and scholarship money, which we use to help our students fund their education. Last year, we gave away $518,000 to help potential ministers become ministers. We told this story crisply. We used a 7-minute video that tells the story of just one of our alums who is actually a teacher and very well known, Mark Morrison Reed. And so Mark's teaching and writing, as you all know, has been a lot about racial justice. And we had pledge cards and we asked people to think about becoming donors. And we raised $101,000. Which reinforces the fact of you take data, you use it to contact people, you tell them a compelling story with passion, and we are very passionate about our work, and then you ask them for their support. That's kind of what fundraising is about. So let me tell you about the Unitarian Church in Westport, a similar story. Like all of you in your congregations, we have a drive every year in the spring to raise money for our annual operating budget. Sound familiar? And we have a subcommittee of our year-round stewardship committee. We have gone to a year-round stewardship model a couple of years ago because we think it's really important to be talking about stewardship all the time, 12 months out of the year. But in the spring, we really need to be able to know how much money we're going to have for the following year's operating budget, because our annual meeting is in June, and the budget gets voted on, and it's really nice to have a budget that matches the money that has been pledged to come in. I mean, that's just practical. I know you all do that. You don't live in fantasy. So about 3 years ago, we started a program which we called Visiting Stewards. And we had a consultant from one of the UUA consultants come and train about 30 of us to be visiting stewards. So the purpose of the visiting steward is to reach out to a member, a fellow or sister member of the congregation, and actually ask them, so how's it going? How are you and the church getting along? How's your spirit? How's your family? How's your 7-year-old doing in our religious education program? Are you enjoying being in the choir? Is it really an awful burden to be on the board of trustees? And just, we're all in this enterprise we call a congregation. We're all in it together. So how are you? And we encourage people to actually do this face-to-face. Call people up and say, I'd like to meet you for coffee. Or could I come over to your house? Or could we chat in the library after the Sunday service? Or, I really want to meet you. And each of the visiting stewards gets assigned somewhere between 8 and 10 people to do this with. And our goal is to reach every member, or in the case of this year, reach every member who has, we created a floor for sizes of pledges and said, I think everybody who gives more than $500 a year to the congregation, we're going to reach out and visit them. It's all about relationships. It's all about knowing people. It's all about sharing the story of the congregation on a very personal level. How is it for you? How is your experience in this congregation? And would you consider continuing to support it? And would you consider raising your pledge 5% or 10%. So my life as a fundraiser, both for Meva Lombard Theological School and for my beloved home congregation, is just totally integrated. It's all about the commonality of our shared experience of loving this faith and speaking of that love, and speaking about it from a very authentic, personal, soul-based perspective. We have a new designer. Isn't that wonderful? The Chicago skyline in rainbow color.
That's great.
Thank you.
I used to be Mary Catherine Morn, and now I'm Vale Weller. I'm the Congregational Giving Director. Mary Catherine had to slip out to help facilitate another conversation. So we have a few minutes left, and there are a couple things we'd like to do. We'd like to have the opportunity for our panelists to visit with one another, and we get to just sort of look in on that to see what they might like to talk about together. And we're going to just do that for 5 minutes or so, so that other folks, if you would like to ask questions of any of us, this would be a time to do that in about 5 minutes. But for now, I'd love to just give you the chance to reflect on what you've heard, talk about whatever you'd like. Talk amongst yourselves.
So, Jessica.
Make sure you use your mics.
Thank you.
So I'm aware of the fact that this is, I've been coming to GA since Lincoln was a boy. Actually, I've been coming to GA since 1968, so it'll be 50 years in 2018.
You haven't missed a single year?
I've missed three.
It's inspiring.
But this is your first.
It's my very first.
So I'm curious to know, it was the first time. I'm a former chair of the GA Planning Committee. I've more or less done everything. So,
that's true.
So how is it? What's the takeaway?
Well, it's kind of bad because this is only the second session that I've sat because I've been so busy. So we've also been having similar conversations with our donors and telling the story of Star King, and so I've been in Rosemary's Suite a good bit. So I haven't been out on the floor as much as I would like, and this is really just my second session. But I love the energy. So, not all fundraisers are extroverts, but I do happen to be one. And I love walking through the exhibit hall. I love seeing all the different organizations, and I love the banner parade. My daughter watched the banner parade, and then we joined in with the Star King contingency and walked through and around, and she just loved it. And I think it's, just 2 weeks ago, we've only been going to a UU church for a little over a year, and my daughter joined in the affirmation for the first time. And she had learned the whole thing. I thought it was just whizzing right past her. And she was love is the doctrine of this church, and she meant it. But I think that's really just cementing it for me. And next year, I'm hoping that I'll be even more organized and meet more people so I can enjoy more of this kind of stuff. So,
thank you.
Yeah. I was connecting what Sean had to say and what Denny had to say. And it's really that even when you're dealing with the really sexy digital fundraising stuff that's hip and cool, mm-hmm. ultimately it's about your storytelling. Because that video, which it was masterful, Denny. The video was great. At the breakfast. It was good. It was really good. I'm filing all this away for my institution. But that video could easily be translated into a digital space. And because it had the right qualities of telling the story and the narrative and showing the need for support at the same time, it's still just about relationships and storytelling, whether you're talking about one-on-one fundraising or whether you're talking about the digital cool stuff. That was my takeaway.
Yeah, well, I'm going to let Sean chime in. But as a technique, because this is about fundraising techniques, the video, and we have done this before, the video tells the story of one person. Mm-hmm. One person who is always an alum and therefore minister mm-hmm. of our school. And it's a story of ministry.
Yeah. We do the same thing. We haven't exactly connected it to fundraising, but we have the I Am Star King series, if you've ever seen any of those videos circulating. And I want to do more with the alums. We've done a lot of faculty, staff, students, and I want to bring in more alumni stories and more of what they've done.
You've got some great alums.
Yeah, we have some wonderful alums. I mean, I kind of am interested to see who has a minister that graduated from Star King. Okay, and how about Meadville? Hey, we're about half and half. I like that.
I feel bad because I went to Harvard, so what about Harvard?
Okay, shout out for the Harvard folks.
All right, thanks.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, it's about telling people stories because that's what we're really interested in as human beings, mm-hmm. not just as UUs. We're interested in like, what's that person's story? What are they all about? And how is what you're doing transforming people's lives, whether that's in the congregation or the Faithify projects or at a seminary?
There's something interesting that we learned. We launched our site, and from landing on the project page to being complete in your donation, you had to go through basically 3.5 steps. And after we launched, we got rid of the half step. And you wouldn't believe the difference that made in donors completing the donation.
Reducing the friction.
And so what I heard and what Jessica was saying is, how do you reduce the friction? Mm-hmm. How do you get the things right so that people are more likely not only to act on it, but act on it faster.
Smooth.
Rather than later. The inspiration is what's going to get them in the first place. But, you know, when we have a donor that emails me and says, I tried to make a donation and it didn't work.
Heartbreaking.
Your $500 donation is
going
down just because of that frustration. Mm-hmm. And so it's all connected.
Thanks for that little bit of conversation together. I wish we had more time, but I think since we have about 15 minutes left, it would be nice to give you all the chance to share your ideas or ask your questions. So come on up to the mic and make sure you introduce yourself and tell us where you're from. Oh, boy. Maybe we should just pass the microphone because every person has something they want to say.
Well, hi. I'll keep it short. My name is Jim Pinkham, and I'm here from the First UU Church in Columbus locally. Mm-hmm. So welcome, everyone, to Columbus, and I hope you're having a great time.
On High Street.
Yes, off of Weisheimer. So up north a little bit. I wanted to talk a little bit about fundraising auctions as a creative way to raise funds. I've been doing it there since 2003 or so. What first got me into it and what got me really passionate about it as an effective technique is not the fact that it raises money, which it does, but that it builds community. And especially the events are ways of connecting people together. And I just wanted to tie that into something that Sean said earlier, because, you know, everyone has something special to offer. Everyone has a core that they love, and ballroom dancing, right? I'd do that. I would give a lesson to somebody, you know, and everybody has something you wouldn't know just from their profession or looking at them. And this is a way you can discover that in each other. And it's a way of bringing things together. So, but the thing I wanted to tie in there is, as you ask people those questions and you say, what can you offer? What can you do that's special? You are practicing your skill in pitching projects, and you're going to use those same skills when it comes time to do those one-on-one fundraising conversations. So it all ties together. So I just wanted to kind of dispel the myth that auctions are in competition with other fundraising efforts. I think they are collaborative and cooperative. I hope.
And this is why we do the year-round stewardship, because we also create these fun occasions to raise money, including very successful auctions.
I think so. So I have an auction software that I sell, and I'm happy to talk about it later. Thank you.
That's interesting. Yeah.
My name is Cass Rifkin. I'm from Unitarian Universalist Church of Little Rock. And I have two questions, real quick ones. Sean, what happens with Faithify if somebody donates money and the project isn't funded?
So technically how our site works is when you make a donation the first time, you're actually making a pledge. So we take an imprint of the credit card, and once the project is completed and it's meet its goal, then the charge is actually the charge is actually made.
Okay, thank you. And Jessica, I have a question on database. I keep the database for my church. And one of the things that I have not been able to figure out, and I'm hoping somebody has an answer, is how to keep track of people that come like their third, fourth, fifth time. We lose them, and we don't contact them for finance because they, when they first come to visit, they fill out a card, and we get their registration. We get all that information. But we haven't figured out a way of tracking whether they're still coming, and I'm wondering if somebody has an idea how to do that.
Yeah. You have a...
The wisdom is in the village.
That's right. That's right.
I don't care where it comes from.
Because we don't. Well, Denny does, but we're mostly seminaries.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll
talk to that. Hi, I'm Eileen Kane, and I'm from Cedar Lane Unitarian Church in Bethesda, Maryland. We have very much the challenge of an upstairs, downstairs church, but I believe you have just given me a solution in that I think we have to tell the story about our RE successes to the parents who are downstairs who don't come upstairs. And we've got to figure out a way to do that successfully because we have half of our church who isn't giving money. We're getting the over 55s. We're not getting the people who are in their 30s who are really also now in this very odd thing of they're still carrying student debt, they've just bought a house, they have small children. We've got to do something different.
We have the same problem in Westport that many of the RE parents drop the kids off and don't really participate. We're also upstairs, downstairs.
But I think
except for the part that's off campus, you know, like yeah. You have in the house that used to be.
So thank you. I think you've given me an idea that the story we need to move to tell now in our congregation is what's happening with
the
success
of the kids.
So when
you do it, let me know if it works.
Okay.
And make sure you don't that you're emphasizing the importance of just participation. I mean, and so even if they're just giving a small amount, later when they clean up those student loans, when other things shake loose and they get a number of raises and they're moving forward in their career, you're on their list, right? So that's the trick with it, young alumni, if you're in a higher ed space, we might call them. So yeah. You want to make sure that you're on their list of philanthropic priorities, even if it's a small amount. It's an investment.
I'm Doug Reeder from First UU here in Columbus, and something I've become interested in recently is effective philanthropy, which involves trying to quantify the outcomes of philanthropic endeavors. For example, if you have some treatment which prevents someone from going blind, obviously that person can be productive throughout their life, and so even if it's expensive.
Although people with vision impairment can be productive in many other ways.
That is a very good point. And I was wondering if that was, I've been thinking this might be relevant to our activities, particularly with regard to quantifying the outcomes rather than the effort spent on things. And I wanted to ask if you had any experience with quantifying the outcome of various projects, and was that helpful? Was it not helpful?
Mm-hmm. There's a great guy, if you watch TED Talks, I mean, most of us have seen a TED Talk or two. There's a great guy out there named Dan Pallotta. And he writes a lot about the state of charity and philanthropy today. Mm-hmm. And he thinks that this push towards outcome, and quantifying outcomes is a dangerous space for the future of philanthropy. Because philanthropy is dependent upon institutions, which often need operating support, which you can't quantify. There is definitely a trend towards project-based fundraising. Sean's absolutely correct there. But there is still a case to be made for institutions and the need for institutions, which are much more difficult to quantify. So I'll just throw that out there. Anybody interested in Dan Pallotta, check out his TED Talk. It's good stuff.
How do you spell that?
P-A-L-L-O-T-T-A? Might just be one T.
We've got just about 7 minutes left, so Let's see if we can get a few more questions in.
Okay. Hi, I'm Christiane Olivo from Boulder Valley UU Fellowship in Lafayette, Colorado. And I have a question about Faithify, because as you were starting to explain it, you know, my first question in my mind was, well, who are these people who are donating? And then at the end of your talk, you said, well, you have to activate your network. So then I started thinking, well, who's in the network and how is it different from just like we did a little fundraiser to put stained glass windows in the sanctuary, and we got twice as much just from the congregants after the service. So how, I don't quite understand it yet. How do it, like, who's the network and who donates?
Yeah. So you were crowdfunding, just not online, right? I mean,
right.
Most fundraising is a form of crowdfunding. What, you know, what most of our projects have realized is that about 70 to 80% of the donors to their campaign, their project, are people they know that they thought they would get donations from. And so some of the time that's getting a donation that they may not have gotten if they didn't ask for it. And then there's another off chance that there are people kind of on the peripheries of the networks who see something on social media, or one of your members asks someone who isn't already kind of connected to the people that you would already ask would donate. So it's more just a different kind of technological medium to ask for donations. You know, one thing that I've seen churches do is if they have like an outreach endeavor that they're crowdfunding, that can kind of hit two different networks. It can hit the church network in terms of people wanting to donate, but it also could, the community who's involved in whatever outreach they're mm-hmm. doing can also be invited to donate. The language and the messaging may be a bit different, mm-hmm. but they can still be directed to kind of make a donation to the same campaign.
Okay, thank you.
My question is also for Sean. I'm Mary Richards from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames, Iowa. My 20 years experience, former experience as a prosecutor, leads me to ask you this question, which be apparent if I visit your website. I know that people with fraudulent intent can be very creative and very devious, and I wonder if you have a screen that eliminates or at least partially eliminates that kind of request.
That's a great question. When we get a project, we put it through what I call the intuitive and accountable screen, which is when I read the project, do I kind of understand what it is, and do I have a reasonable suspicion that it would actually go to the place they say it is? That being said, we've prioritized being able to provide a platform available to all people, and we think crowdfunding is, in some level, allowing the crowd to make those decisions. And so we haven't had an experience of anyone using the site fraudulently, and we would hope that would never be the case. But I would wonder if they would get the traction needed to have a successful campaign if they were, in fact, fraudulent, because the social proof and the social capital that you need to actually make someone come to the site and then donate is quite high. And so that would probably deter a lot of people from being effective in using our site that way. But it's a great question.
Hello, I'm David Tucker. I'm from the Eno River UU Fellowship in Durham, North Carolina. And I want to say thank you to all of the panelists. I especially appreciated the good points made about data and my financial life. One of the hats I wear is as a financial data analyst, so that is always, I think, very important to have. I also wanted to ask a couple of quick questions of Denny about the Meadville breakfast, which I was a part of.
Which Deb Kerr was at?
Yes.
And Jacqueline Brett?
Yes.
Kalani.
There were a lot of us there from Uruff. I thought it was a wonderful event. I was just curious, the wonderful outcome for you, the $101,000, was that net of any expenses? And because obviously it cost something to feed us.
No. That's the gross number. And and most people, and many people pledge across 3 years because that's what we ask for.
Right.
That's another point about we do that so that people create a relationship, and if once you're in 3 years, getting our mailings and getting our updates and everything, you're building the relationship between you and Meadville Lombard. And so we have yet to to net out the expense of the right. breakfast, and something like probably I'd say probably about somewhere between 25% and 30% of the money it came in checks, in checks. So it's going to be current,
right?
And the rest will be spread over the 3 years.
And the other quick question, if I may, about the other hat you wear with the Westport, Connecticut congregation, the visiting stewardship team sounds very interesting to me. I'm the incoming chair of the board at ERUF, so stewardship's very much on my mind these days.
I bet, right.
And, was it a long training period for the team members there?
It was a Saturday morning. The first time we did it when we had the professional was basically from we fed people breakfast, and it was like from 9 to 1.
Right.
And this year I did the recruitment and the training, and we did it from basically from 9 to 12, and it wasn't we did have a consultant, a former UUA development staff
member. And I can recommend the stewardship for us consultants are the ones that we recommend to folks, and they have a
right.
they have a website that you can go and check in with.
So, David, we limited it to 3 hours, and that was a mistake.
Okay. And then the last piece of it very quickly, there must be some choppy waters that come up at times. Someone has a difficult call, or they learn something that needs to be passed on to
and
the ministerial staff.
And that it's passed
staff.
On to the minister,
right.
and who may then pass it on to the pastoral care associates. Okay. It's a great way to find out that, no, I can't pledge because I've lost my job,
right?
Or my kid is sick, and so that's another thing that the visiting steward program does,
right?
Because it's about reaching out.
It's all about relationship.
Right. Thank you.
I'm so sorry that we've come to the end of the time, and I know you had other good questions and sharing. I want to thank so much each of our panelists. I know Sean has said he's available to stick around to answer a few questions. I'm not sure if the others are. There may have meal plans.
Sorry, I'm going to dinner with donors.
Exactly. So I don't know if that's true of Jessica, too.
I can stay for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then I've got to go get a gala together.
Well, as we close, let me just put out there for you some of the important things that we have heard that you can take as the last words. I invite you to... remember to dream boldly, to claim Unitarian Universalism, be willing to take risks, understand that the support of our faith is a noble endeavor, supporting worthy institutions. The importance of fun and joy goes a long way. To have an unapologetic attitude toward inviting people into supporting their highest values. It's all about relationship as you tell the story of how lives are being transformed through the work that you do. Thank you for all of what you do in your congregations to strengthen our faith. And thank you again to each of our panelists.
Thank you, Vail.
My pleasure.